What's up? Welcome back to another episode of 200 and Counting. I'm your host, Tia Hill. I'm so excited to be back with you all. I've got 10 new episodes on deck for this season. We might have some bonus episodes later on in the year. Who knows? Who can say, you know? But I have a lot planned and I'm really excited to get into it with you all. Thank you so much to everyone who's listened so far, and feel free to leave me a review on Apple Podcasts and share with your friends. Let everybody know. I wanted to start off the season with a documentary that is new. It's on Netflix and I felt like it was very relevant. It's called Coded Bias.
I got computer vision software that was supposed to track my face. It didn't work until I put on this white mask. That's when I started looking into issues of bias that can creep into technology.
So the documentary follows a Black woman named Joy Bullamwini, and she's a researcher at MIT who realized while taking another class that facial recognition technology did not work on her face unless she put on a white mask. Now, isn't that just a crazy sentence? Like, she literally has to put on a stark white mask, like some theater looking mask, for any facial recognition technology to work on her. And after she found that, she realized that a lot of the facial recognition technology and artificial intelligence in general was biased towards people of lighter complexions. And it's interesting because I've seen articles about this before, and I've seen threads on Twitter talking about these machine biases. And now anytime I go and even use like an automatic paper towel dispenser or something and it doesn't work immediately, I'm like, okay, sus. But Joy goes on to explain that the way a lot of these systems are set up and made is that you have to teach a machine how to identify people or things by showing them a bunch of different sets of faces that you want them to learn while you're setting everything up. So you have to show them a bunch of faces so that they can recognize this is what a face looks like. So if you are showing a machine consistently the same type of person and you're saying this is what a face looks like, obviously when you show a machine a person that is not in that original set of data or information, the machine is not going to recognize that as a person. And there's this huge lack of diversity in STEM, both in terms of gender diversity and racial diversity. And when she looked at the data sets that they were using to train these machines, she found that the examples being used were basically all white men. And so I'm assuming it's a mix of probably who was accessible at that time, but also they talk about how everyone has inherent bias, and our ideas of what is normal when it comes to artificial intelligence and computer behavior comes from a small group of white men who are the ones with the power to create and implement these systems in the first place.
Our ideas about technology that we think are normal are actually ideas that come from a very small and homogeneous group of people.
Now, if you listen to the episode that I did on the podcast about the documentary The Social Dilemma, they talked about the same idea, that it's a small group of people who set the standard for the rest of the world when it comes to social media. And it's the same for AI. And in fact, AI started at Dartmouth in the math department with computers. And in order to determine how smart they were, they measured it on their ability to play chess really, really, really well. And that's how they measure success. That's how they measure intelligence, by how well computers can win chess games and beat world-renowned chess players. And while, yes, that is amazing, you have to be really good at chess to do that, that is a certain definition of what intelligence is. That's a very specific definition of intelligence. And that may not necessarily apply to other kinds of smart. In the same way that you have book smarts, street smarts, different kinds of smarts, there are different ways to identify intelligence that aren't always necessarily the most standard way, or the way that we as society have conditioned as normal. One of the women interviewed in the documentary, Meredith Broussard, love how many women were interviewed for this. It was mainly female researchers and also mainly people of color. But anyway, Meredith pointed out that that is a pretty narrow definition of what intelligence is. But we took that and we ran with it, and now here we are. And the main problem here is that humans make mistakes. Humans have inherent bias. So when humans are creating these computers and these machines and teaching them and then letting them kind of run along and do their own thing and then just assuming that they'll get it right, that's kind of scary, because now computers also have the bias that humans put on them. And I'm not saying that people necessarily did this knowingly. I'm not saying that researchers went in there and they were like, let's program the AI to hate Black people. I'm not saying that. However, as they discuss in the documentary, it may not be that overt, but it's there. Not sensing a darker face, using this kind of technology to police the actions of Black and brown people. And a question that the documentary poses is, what does it mean to be in a society where AI is governing the liberties we might have and some people are being discriminated against by these machines?
As I started looking at the data sets, I learned that for some of the largest data sets that have been very consequential for the field, they were majority men and majority lighter skinned individuals or white individuals. So I call this pale male data. And if you have a lot of pale male data, you're destined to fail the rest of the world, who I call the undersampled majority, people and women of color, because they're not even included.
And a lot of these systems, whether it's facial recognition or just general algorithms or personal assistant technology, whatever, a lot of these systems utilize big data, which again, I think I've talked about in the episodes for the Social Dilemma, as well as terms and conditions may apply. And it's an essential part of the information about us that's used by these systems, by these machines, to make judgments.
EKG reading, CCTV footage, a photo of a sandwich, a voice message, a tweet. All of these contain data that can be collected, analyzed, and monetized. Supercomputers and algorithms allow us to make sense of increasingly larger amounts of information in real time.
Now, what gets a little bit concerning is the fact that big data knows everything about you and can predict a lot of things about you. One of the women interviewed in this, Kathy O'Neill, describes an algorithm as something that uses historical information to make a prediction about the future at its most basic level. Let's say you visit a lot of sites about the beach. You're always looking at swimsuits and flip-flops, things like that. All the big data that's being collected around you is this person likes the beach, they like the sun, they like the ocean, they like to swim, based on where you've been on the internet, what you've bought. So all of a sudden, if the algorithm starts suggesting, hey, buy these tickets to Aruba, well, the algorithm learned what it is that you like, what it is that you buy, what it is that you look at, and they predicted that you probably would buy a trip to the beach. And they give very real examples of that. Big data can understand who, for example, might have a gambling addiction or even be predisposed to one. In the US, especially, big data is often used, and our personal information is used to sell something to us, you know, trying to get that person to buy tickets to Vegas or Atlantic City, something like that. And it's very interesting to me because they talk about how it's very specific to the US that people use this data to sell you things. They talk about China later in the documentary as well. And they say in China, a lot of times, yes, they collect a lot of data about their citizens, but they're using it to identify people and to kind of log people. In the US, they are using it to try to sell you things. And they're trying to push ads in front of poor people. They're trying to get rich people to spend their money here, poor people to spend their money here. It's interesting because the documentary travels around the world and talks to researchers and just regular people dealing with the effects of AI in different ways. They go to Brooklyn, where there's an apartment building that mainly has black and brown tenants. And they have a landlord who's threatening to put in facial recognition cameras at the entrances. In London, they're talking about how they have facial recognition cameras like out the wazoo. And in China, they talk about where they use facial recognition to track protesters as well as to give you a social score. So this happens all around the world. And I'm glad that they did that because I think that there is this idea that, oh, this couldn't happen here. Despite the fact that in 2020, we saw things like this happen constantly in many, many, many different countries. And the message that everyone has in common is that one, it's not just some foreign abstract idea that hasn't hit home yet. And two, there's so many things that could go wrong here. One point that they made that really stood out to me was someone said, the future is already here. It's just not evenly distributed. Meaning that when it comes to new technology, the cool stuff goes to the richer people first, but the more punitive uses for technology, like facial recognition to monitor people, goes to poorer populations first. And they give so many wild examples of AI gone wrong to make the point that tech is being rapidly adapted and changed every year with no safeguards. We've got all these facial recognition things on our phones, Snapchat filters, algorithms, and there aren't really any rules around it if you really, really think about it. And I've made this point before on the podcast, but the internet is still so young, relatively speaking, that we haven't hit a point yet where there's legislation around all these little things. All of these little things that could have some really serious consequences in the future, we haven't really addressed them. We just keep on getting new stuff and we're like, okay, cool. We went from having you type your passcode in your iPhone to give them your fingerprint to let's do facial recognition technology. And nobody really said anything. Everyone's just like, all right, cool. I mean, guilty as charged because look, I love my phone, but wow.
One of the reasons I was quite concerned is I learned that in the US, there are no federal regulations for facial recognition technology. So you have
to this day,
there are still no federal regulations. So you have a space where companies, right, can sell systems to government entities and other types of organization without any kind of oversight.
One of the examples that they talk about is that Apple had a credit card that was accused of being biased. Amazon used a recruiting tool that rejected all women's resumes, any women colleges or sports, and ended up having a bias against hiring women. And then you look at the numbers, and less than 14% of AI researchers are women, because they point out that this AI isn't making ethical decisions, it's making mathematical ones based on what it's been taught and what it can calculate.
The glitch, sources told Reuters, stemmed from the fact that Amazon's computer models were trained by observing patterns in resumes of job candidates over a 10-year period, largely from men, in effect teaching themselves that male candidates were preferable.
Technology thought, oh, Amazon doesn't like any resume that has the word women's in it. Women's, you know, captain of a women's chess club, captain of a women's soccer team, and all women's university, because the company has hired so many male engineers or software developers, data scientists, and so forth. that clearly unsuccessful candidates are the ones who also would have this word women's in it.
The wildest example to me was that Microsoft had this AI that it let learn about human behavior from the internet. From the internet. It had they had an official Twitter account for it, and it was going to spew out basically what it found. It was going to aggregate things from the internet and learn how to be a human and make, you know, tweets like a human. And then within a day, it was racist as hell. It was super racist, homophobic, anti-Semitic, Islamophobic, every type of phobic from all the crap that it picked up online and from social media.
Microsoft designed Tay's software to mimic the speech patterns of 18 to 24-year-olds. Tweet to Tay, and the bot tweets you back. But it did not take long for internet trolls to poison Tay's mind. Soon, Tay was ranting about Hitler, launching racist and anti-feminist attacks.
Some of the algorithms they talked about were crazy. They had one that classified teachers as good or bad, and they were firing teachers based on this algorithm. And this algorithm ended up being wrong multiple times. They had recidivism risk algorithms that show how likely it is that a defendant would reoffend and go back to prison. But the questions that the algorithm used to calculate how likely that person is to reoffend and go back to prison, a lot of these questions are proxies for race and class. For example, asking someone if your parent has been incarcerated before, have other members of your family been incarcerated before? And we know that statistically, unfortunately, Black and brown people are more likely to have that answer be yes, due to a number of other systemic factors that, you know, we talked about on the podcast in the past. And these algorithms and these computers overrule the discernment of government officials, of school administrators, judges, probation officers, of humans, in order to keep people in the high risk category and make money off them through the prison system. But that's another discussion. But it's kind of like people just let these machines go and they're like, well, you know what? That's what the machine said. So I can't But no. Now, the one question I kept having through this documentary was, OK, yes, this is scary. But also, what are we supposed to do about it? You know, we're so deep in it. I think people specifically who are around my age and younger, we are way too far gone. We've had a digital footprint for so much of our lives. So where do you go from here? But what I appreciated was that towards the end of the documentary, they did say that a lot of local governments had passed legislation that banned certain facial recognition technology and other things like that. So there were positive steps being made. And there was a really touching moment where they showed Joy, who'd been the main focal point of the entire documentary, testifying before Congress about the issue of bias and machine learning. And I was like, good for you. Go ahead.
We have a technology that was created and designed by one demographic that is only mostly effective on that one demographic. And they're trying to sell it and impose it on the entirety of the country.
So we have the pale male data sets being used as something that's universal when that isn't actually the case when it comes to representing the full sepia of humanity.
And do you think that this could exacerbate the already egregious inequalities in our criminal justice system?
It already is.
And just overall too, I really appreciate the diversity in terms of who they spoke to as representatives of these communities, who they spoke to on an expert level. It was so refreshing to see a documentary that featured Black people and people of color speaking as experts on something scientific and something not related to racism or to our own suffering. And also, this was one small thing that I appreciated. And this was one small thing that I noticed, but I appreciated. They showed Joy by herself doing all this cool stuff, and they only show her. And they only show her and her significant other at the very end, which I appreciate because this is so subtle. But a lot of times when women in any field, no matter how smart or accomplished they may be, people choose to focus on the man in their life, if there is one. They always look at women through the lens of the other men who are around them. And it's a little thing, but I think it's important to do that because it primes people to think of women as professionals in a much different way. It made her appear a lot stronger, more formidable as an expert by framing it in that way. And I don't even know if that was necessarily on purpose, but it was just a small thing that I noticed and I liked it. They also wrapped up every mini story within the documentary. The people who were living in Brooklyn who were having the issue with their landlord, they rallied. You know, she went to Congress and talked about this. He ended up not installing facial recognition. You know, in London, they're still fighting against their facial recognition issues. So they really wrapped every story well. They'd break out, they'd have a discussion, but they always stay focused on the main issue at hand that was the bigger through line for the film. One scene that I found really funny, well, it wasn't even supposed to be funny, but there's a part where Joy is getting her hair braided and they go in and they talk to her while she's getting her hair braided, which I did think was interesting because it was about her, but then also about the other people throughout the country. So she's, you know, doing some spoken word that she had written. And I believe she was performing, you know, her own rendition of Ain't I a Woman, which was originally a Sojourner Truth speech.
Collecting data, chronicling our past, often forgetting to deal with gender, race, and class. Again, I ask, Ain't I a woman?
So she's there doing this interview, getting her hair braided. And I was like, good for you, girl, because if I were getting my hair braided, I am not in the mindset to also be on camera and be talking to someone. So more power to you. I thought that was truly amazing. Overall, I thought this documentary honestly was really well done. It's a genuinely interesting, relevant topic. I think we can all relate to it. And it presents the problem. It presents examples of said problem and the solution in a reasonable amount of time. It is simple. I think a lot of times when it comes to these big topics like social media or AI or algorithms, that's such a broad topic that has so many subtopics within the one main topic that a lot of films have a really hard time getting to the point, and they end up being very convoluted and complicated and hard to follow. Whereas this one was just zip, zap, zop. This is what it is all together. And it was easy to follow and easy to relate to. And I felt like, I learned something. Everything is so smooth and uniform. And honestly, I have to say that I would give this 4.5 stars. The only reason it isn't at 5 is because it wasn't necessarily, it didn't necessarily move me. And like I said, there's been so many documentaries recently focusing on modern day technology, specifically on social media. And what usually bothers me about it is that it's made for people who don't know what social media is. This assumes that you know, but it also explains things enough to you that even whether you know or you don't know, it's giving you new information that you may not have known before. Which I like. And this, it's recent, it's relevant, it does a great job discussing the issue. It's not too surface level, it gets deep, but then gives you some real resolutions to both the story and in our everyday lives about how to tackle the issue, rather than just scaring the hell out of you. Then you finish the documentary and then you just feel unsettled. Absolute 4.5 star rating for me. It's on Netflix right now. If you want to check it out, give it a watch and feel free to let me know what you think. But that is it for today's episode. And if you enjoyed this episode of 200 and Counting and you want to hear more, be sure to subscribe. And if you like hearing my voice, feel free to follow me on social media. I'll post links in the description. And if you want to continue to hear my voice on this podcast, please feel free to write a review, tell your friends, share this around, and keep listening. All right. Thanks so much for listening, and I'll see you on the next episode.